Foodie Films is brought to you by the Cage Club Podcast Network. For all things Cage Club related, head on over to cageclub.me. That's cageclub.me. Hey there, foodie fans, and welcome back to another episode of Foodie Films. Of course, this is your host, your chef de cinema cuisine, Kyle Reinfried. What's going on? What's happening? How are you? Happy New Year! Happy New Year! No, that's not how it goes. But anyway, last time I spoke to you was, well, it was the episode that came out on Christmas. So yeah, this is the first episode to come out after the New Year. We are in a new year, obviously. A new decade. 2020, we are in the, what is this decade going to be called? It was the Roaring Twenties. I have no idea what this one's going to be called. I'm looking forward to finding out. But I had a lovely New Year. I went down to Marco Island. That's located off the west coast of Florida. And I haven't been to Florida in a little over 5 years. Last time I went down, I went to the Keys, Key Largo, Marathon, Key West. Had a great time there. Very different vibe from Marco Island. Marco Island, there were six of us that went down, all of the ripe age of 30 to 32, and I think we brought the plane age average down to 60. Yes, the snowbirds were flying down. They spent Christmas and Hanukkah with all their relatives, and now they're flocking on down to Florida. But I had a lovely time. And it was just three awesome beach days. And the first night, I mean, we went out. I had grouper every day, a grouper sandwich every day, different styles of grouper from different places. Last time I ate grouper was when I went to the Bahamas. You guys know all about that, when I went to the Bahamas for Top Chef Finale. And I didn't eat, you know, this was just 3 days, so my stomach didn't get irritated like eating 3 weeks of fried grouper down in the Bahamas. So that was delightful. That was lovely. There we go with the word lovely again. Maybe that's my 2020 motto. Lovely by Kyle Reinfried. Anyway, yeah, Florida was great. Marco Island was great. Beach was great. I'm trying to think. Went to a brewery, Marco Island Brewery, I believe it was called. Pretty original name. They had like four beers, four original drafts. Okay, they're okay. But then it was the first time ever I've seen the option for a flight for like domestic beers like Bud Light, Coors, Michelob. It was interesting. I mean, to each their own. I guess that's a cool option if you just want to have a little bit of each of those beers. But as far as a brewery goes, not terribly impressive, but forget about that brewery. This episode, it's all about Hermit Thrush. Yes, Hermit Thrush in Brattleboro, Vermont. I sit down with Avery Schwenk, co-founder, vice president, and brewer. He's a really cool guy. We laugh a lot. This was a fun one. He's a cool dude. I'm just really excited because this is the first brewery we're covering via, First Cut. So it's a brewery you'll hear all about it in the episode, but a little history. I visited it 2 summers ago, not this past summer, the summer before, and they do all sours, and it's a lot of sours, and I love sours. And this is just Avery kind of guiding me through and maybe explain to some of you guys what sours are all about, and just you got to get up to Brattleboro, Vermont, even this time if you snowboard, perfect time of year, or, you know, ski, perfect time. I don't go down hills fast, so I enjoy it much more in the summertime. But it's just a really great brewery, really intimate. Everyone's incredibly friendly because, you know, it's Vermont, which is practically Canada. But we recorded this in their gallery, which is down the hallway, just very, very close to their bar. So forgive hearing people in the background. But you know what? It's people having a good time enjoying this delicious beer. So here we go. Here's me and Avery talking the good talk. Boy, well, we're just going to hop right into this.
Sounds good to me. Yeah, that's, I think, one of my favorite beers we put out this year.
Yeah, what is this called again?
That's Estate Brattle Beer.
State Brattle
Estate,
Beer.
Yeah, like from the land that we are. Yeah,
all right,
yeah.
So, and now Joan, because we're in it now, we're recording. I read that you were a radio man in college, so you're familiar with the
territory? Chris and I both worked in radio, that's how we met. I guess we were volunteer student radio, but
that's
we took
awesome.
Our jobs very seriously.
I just did that. There's a, you know, so I'm from Jersey, and there's Fairleigh Dickinson University, and mm-hmm. they have a station that they share with from, I don't know what time in the morning they start, maybe 6 a.m.
Yeah.
To 4 p.m., and then they have to hand it over to, they share it with NYU for
oh,
some
sure.
reason, the
okay.
station.
Yeah, why not?
But I guessed it on it, and it's an all-oldies station, so I had a blast, because I came up with, like, a playlist for, like, 50 minutes of music.
Yeah.
It was really fun.
That's great, yeah.
Yeah, but so, and... Joan, who has just set this up, put us in contact. What position is it?
Joan's our tasting room manager and okay. kind of filler of gaps here at the brewery. So she actually started out as one of our brewers and then just kind of wanted to get more involved in the nitty-gritty of business side. So she's
awesome.
Kind of stepped away from production more actively and now is, you know, doing a lot of our events and coordination and
very cool.
Does a lot of talking about our beer around places.
Yeah, so I obviously have to thank her for setting this up, getting us, you know, talking,
okay,
and
so
then obviously for bringing
out.
This delicious beer right here.
Yeah.
So cheers. So I think this is the first time that I'm drinking on, which is proper. This
yeah.
is the first time I'm talking with a brewmaster. So if it, for the people right now, give them, we're at Hermit Thrush Brewery in
yep.
Brattleboro, Vermont.
Correct.
And give us your, I guess, your name, your title.
Yeah, I'm Avery Schwenk, co-founder of Hermit Thrush Brewery. We've been open for just over 5 years now.
Yeah, you're one bartender when I came in and said it's your fifth anniversary.
Yeah, November, the Saturday before Thanksgiving is when we opened 5 years ago.
There you go.
Yeah, we've done a lot of expansion and developing a product since then, and it's been fantastic.
Yeah, like I told you guys, and you guys, if you listen to all the episodes of Foodie Films, Shane Kelly, who I had on for the Roadhouse episode, we covered that movie.
Nice.
It's one of the drinking movies we covered thus far. You know, classic movie, the late Patrick Swayze, and he lives, I think technically Bondville, but it's at the
bottom. A little north.
You know the 7-Eleven that's right by the access road to Stratton.
Yeah.
He's the other corner, right there.
I have no idea.
He has, technically, the front of his property is commercial real estate, so if you ever want a little pop-up stand, that's commercial right
I'll
there.
I'll keep that in mind,
there
absolutely.
There you go, it's right there by Stratton Mountain. Yeah, so I came up, I haven't been up here in almost a year, it's just like mm-hmm. past year was crazy, and I'm not a winter activities person.
Gotcha.
But I like coming up here in the summer, and I came up here 2 summers ago, and Shane knows my love of sours, and he's like, well, we gotta go to this place, because that's what they do.
Have you seen the back of our hoodies?
No, let me see it. Yes, they're all sour.
There you go.
That's perfect. And it's the correct there. That would have been bad if it's...
I'm a stickler for that. But yeah, no, we've been making all sours pretty much since we started. We had thought initially we were going to be doing some Belgian styles, but really... Chris, my business partner and our mm-hmm. brewmaster, is the makes excellent sours, and that's what I love to drink. So we weren't sure whether people were going to be ready for a brewery with all sours.
Yeah,
and just it's been a great reception for the last 5 years.
How did that begin? Like, what made you? So you guys are buddies from college.
Yeah.
And then where did you grow up?
I grew up in southeast Minnesota, spent some time in Western Mass in school, and then Chris and I met at college outside Philadelphia in Swarthmore.
And what were you studying there?
I was actually in physics and music.
Oh, so exactly.
And he was Chinese and psychology.
So exactly.
Very background.
Exactly what you studied to get into the brewery game.
Exactly. So actually, after school, we both were in different careers. He was working as a social worker. I was a paramedic.
Wow.
And looking for kind of a change of pace, wanted to get out of the city. Both had really good experiences in Vermont previously.
Yeah.
And so we were actually driving up to Vermont every other weekend when I was off work to just come out and do like job interviews and check out towns around here.
Yeah.
And so Chris had been homebrewing for many years at that point, had done some apprenticeships at larger breweries. We'd always talked about, you know, in the back of our minds, looking at having, you know, opening something up. And because I'd always loved his sours, I'd helped him with packaging and quality control with his homebrew, as we call it. And I think on one of those trips, just we're pitched the idea of opening up a brewery up here, and loved Brattleboro, so everything just kind of fell into place within 6 months.
Yeah, this is a cool little, I mean, is it considered a, does it have a city, is it a city?
It's a town.
A town. Town of Brattleboro.
Yeah, there's not too many cities in Vermont. Brattleboro's one of the larger towns.
Yeah, what, you go as far as cities, Rutland, is that a city?
Rutland is a city, Bennington, I believe, is a city.
Okay.
Burlington,
yeah. But that's up north.
Montpelier City.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would hope the capital.
Yeah.
I
beautiful
that.
Capital.
Yeah.
Smallest state capital in the country.
Oh, wow. Fun facts.
Also the only one without a McDonald's.
Without McDonald's?
There's no McDonald's in Montpelier.
Wow.
Yeah.
There we go. Everything is craft up here.
Absolutely.
I mean, that has to be said. We're in Vermont. Like, how many other states really, as far as, not that it is a competition, but
it is.
It is. Exactly. It is. Everything becomes a competition. I mean, this is a mecca. This state is a mecca when it comes to craft beer.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Absolutely. Most breweries per capita of anywhere in the country.
Wow.
That's partly because we have a small population, but also because we just have a ton of great breweries.
Yeah, it's like here, I mean, out in Oregon.
Mm-hmm.
Minnesota's doing okay for itself.
Yeah.
Michigan, I think, right? I think who the biggest...
All right, no, obviously, Oregon, Washington, Colorado.
North Carolina, as far as
North
Asheville
Carolina's
goes.
North Carolina's doing pretty well.
I went to Asheville for the first time back in September for a buddy of mine's bachelor party. And instead of strippers, it was just tons of
breweries.
just walking around. And
oh, perfect.
Just ended up stripping for one another. It was just, it got gritty. No. But it's cool there because, like, in the city of Asheville, you just walk and you're in a walking ring. You keep going.
Yeah.
You know, while it's delicious, the beer is the catch-22. The more beer you drink, the harder it takes.
Well,
to get to these breweries.
The great thing about Brattleboro is you can do a 3-brewery walking tour right downtown here.
Perfect, yeah. Yeah, what are the other...
So we've got Whetstone Station Brewery. They're down by the river, maybe 3 blocks away. And then between us is McNeil's Brewery, which is, I think, the second or third oldest brew pub in Vermont.
Wow.
So he's been around for a long time.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. When did you have your craft beer awakening? You know, when did you discover craft beer...
Very early in life. So I grew up in a family where we had wine with dinner from a young age.
There you go.
My dad had like a liqueur collection, so I was familiar with kind of the breadth of what you can get into. Interestingly enough, though, he was never really a beer guy.
Okay.
So I think I may have at too young of an age to admit the age, had my first Michelob Ultra.
Okay.
Because that was in the house, and I was not a big fan. right after college, I actually moved to Montreal for a couple of years, where the drinking age is 18.
Yeah.
Thankfully, and that's where I got into beer.
There you
go. Specifically, actually, almost immediately got into Belgian styles and sours, because that's really popular in Quebec.
What year is this?
Oh, let me figure that out. That would have been about 2004, 2005.
And there were sours up there?
Oh, yeah. They've been making sour beer in Montreal for quite a long time. Places like Due to Ciel.
Yeah.
Who's that? They make Fin du Monde. Unibrew.
Okay.
A few other kind of smaller places. So they've actually kind of kept that wild beer tradition that kind of came over from France and Belgium alive a lot more than we have here in the States. They didn't have quite the same German beer command of the market. So, you know, pilsners and lagers are there, but you see a lot more Irish reds, a lot more Belgian-style blondes, kind of from the big breweries up there, other than, like, you know, Molson. But even Molson's not really
I feel like that's what
the
they
same
sent.
As the American Pilsner, yeah.
Yeah, and I
or American Lager.
And are they drinking yeah. Molson up there?
Oh, sure.
Okay, it's Definitely. Not like a. I just had recently Chef Dan Churchill on. We were talking. I needed to bug him about Foster's because while he is Australian,
nobody drinks Foster's.
So you're curious, like obviously Americans drink Budweiser,
yeah.
sure, even though it's not even technically owned by an American company anymore. Yeah. But you know, yeah. So I was curious if Molson was, you know, that was
yeah, it's around.
Go-to.
It's around. So
it's like our Yingling. Yeah. I feel like maybe. In the sense of like Yingling
sure.
is the oldest brewery.
Yeah,
you know, like that.
I drink a lot of Yingling in Philly.
Yeah,
oh,
that's
man.
I did a what gig a one time out in West Jersey, and it was like by this. We were shooting this movie by I don't know what kind of. Let's just say a zinc mine. I don't know. And but it was an old mining town that they still kind of did a little bit of it. But they just had this old, you know, bar that just you went in there and you got a frosted mug for $1.50 and you know full frosted mug pint of Yingling.
Oh,
and I was
yeah.
like, wow. This is great. This is
that is
Yingling for. I mean, still, I guess technically is, but it was always like my go-to beer.
Oh yeah, it's yeah. definitely a baseline for yeah. me. I compare a lot of other beers to Yingling in terms of like base quality.
Have you been to that brewery?
I've actually not visited the brewery itself.
I'm not trying to hate on Yingling.
Oh,
not
yeah.
not the best tasting at the end, but as far as the tour and the history mm-hmm. behind it, really fascinating because it's like they built into like the mountain.
Oh, cool.
So it's like
yeah.
perpetually cooled by the interior of the mountain, and they even showed you the brick wall that they built during Prohibition to hide the stuff.
Nice.
And it was the, I don't know if it was the only, but one of the few breweries that could stay open because their porter, definitely one of their darker beers, was considered medicinal.
Oh, perfect.
That's crazy.
That's how you get around the rules.
Yeah. And I think it was just the, I posted it on Instagram, so I should know, but it was just the anniversary of Prohibition ending, so hey, cheers to that.
Oh, cheers, absolutely.
So, we're going up to Canada.
Yeah.
We're drinking up there. Mm-hmm. We're trying beers that we don't have here.
Yeah.
As we're like, you know, much more easily accessible up there.
So, actually, you know that the very first sour beer I had, and the only beer I've ever dreamed about the taste of,
yeah.
Rodenbach's Grand Cru was the beer. That's a Belgian brewery that's
yeah.
absolutely fantastic. And the Grand Cru is the one that you could get. And, oh, man, life-changing experience.
Yeah.
Actually, if you look right over there, our gallery, we took our staff to Belgium after
oh,
two
awesome.
Years of being open and got to get a private tour of Rodenbach's facility.
Oh, that's cool.
So the large oak fooders there in that photo, that's one of Rodenbach's aging facilities.
Wow. Yeah. So, when I started traveling abroad about like 5 years ago,
mm-hmm.
and you know, I was like, what am I doing? Like, I need to see. I did a cross-country road trip, and I'm like, if that's what we have to offer, like, I just have to imagine. I wasn't an isolationist by any means, but I was just like, at this point, I was like, I'm getting older. I'm like, you know, 27, 28 at that point, and I'm like, I need to start seeing more.
Yeah.
And so I did like a 4 or 5 week trip, and I did 15 cities. And I think the second one, I just started in Paris. Yeah, then the next one was Brussels.
Oh, amazing.
And
yeah.
I went to Delirium there, mm-hmm. where they have, I forget how many.
I drank there.
do you remember how many beers they have on tap oh. there? And are available, I should even say?
Available is a lot.
Yeah,
I don't
it's like
even
a
think
thousand,
I got to,
I think, or something like that.
Beers.
Something ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
And all fantastic.
Yeah, and that's where, I mean, I had Belgian style before
mm-hmm.
before then, but like there that became my favorite just as far as traveling abroad, because I mean
that's
I went
fun.
To Germany, I mean I've been to Ireland, you know, I did, you know, the Guinness brewery
oh,
when
sure.
I was in Amsterdam, I did Heineken mm-hmm. that's probably the craziest brewery. I mean, Guinness is very, very impressive, but
yeah.
Heineken, it reminded me of like the beginning of Jurassic Park when they're going
oh my
through
gosh.
they literally have a moment where they strap you in and they like heat you up, mist you, and you're going through the process of being turned into beer.
Oh my god.
And it's just like dino DNA. Like, it's just
thanks, John Hammond.
Exactly. It was crazy. Like, I was like, are those animatronic or the no, those are real people. Like do you remember, we're talking like what, you know, what beers you were dreaming of, but do you remember like the first like brewery you went to?
Ah, that's a good question. First brewery I went to. You know, probably was also up in Montreal when I was there. So that would have been, there's actually some really cool local brew pubs due to CL I mentioned, but that wasn't the first one. There was actually a place called Benelux. That was like around the corner from my apartment. That it was a fantastic little like brew pub. They had maybe two or three of their own beers on tap.
Yeah.
Euro style hot dogs, and I'd go there to watch Canadiens games.
Yeah.
And because you pay the period for your beer. So your beers are $1 in the first period, $2 in the second period, $3 in the third period.
That's just
like... That's Canadian dollars. So you can imagine the deal I was getting.
Yeah.
So I just go there, hang out, meet some folks.
That's awesome.
Have a nice evening.
That's the best when you find spots like that.
And I can't, you know? I can't for the life of me remember a single beer I had there, but I remember enjoying every one of them.
Yeah. Yeah, for me, you know, I grew up like right on the border of Jersey and New York. And there's this town, Pearl River, that I think they have compared to, you know, in the area, there's like obviously the New York St. Paddy's, but then there's a huge Irish population, Pearl River, and they have a huge St. Paddy's every year. Why am I blanking on that sport right now with the scrum?
Rugby.
Rugby, thank you. They have a big rugby match every year. Mm-hmm. They have this one bar there, the Pearl River Hotel. It was just the best, like, even after they stopped allowing people to, like, smoke cigarettes, it was just like, people are smoking cigarettes there. It was just like, the diviest of dive bars, but it was great because you made friends with the bartenders and they treated you right.
That's
you
wonderful.
Just always be like, yeah, that's $2, you know. I think every Tuesday night, if you wore a Hawaiian shirt, any drink was half off.
Nice.
So that's now why I have, like, an extensive Hawaiian shirt. Because I can't wear the same Hawaiian shirt every night.
They didn't know.
But in that town, there was a Defiant Brewery. Mm-hmm. And that was like, I was like, oh, there's more to beer, you know, than, you know, exotic at that point. Different Guinness. Blue Moon.
Mm-hmm.
Stella was fancy, you know.
Fancy beer, sure. Even Heineken at that point.
Heineken. Yeah. Like, but, you know, like, and that's what was fancy and on draft. And then, of course, you had your Budweiser, your Yingling, if you're from the Northeast.
Right.
But that was, like, I went there. I'm like, oh, wow. Like, there's different kinds of beers out there. And that was definitely for me, you know.
I always loved those, like, the regional, kind of, like, regional lagers. Like Yingling or like Natty Bow down like the Baltimore area.
Yeah.
They had Narragansett, a good lager there. Yeah. You know, up in Maine.
Oh, Gansett? Yeah.
Yeah.
Hi there, neighbor. All right.
That's fantastic.
That's what Quinn drank in Jaws, and he crushes the can.
Exactly.
And, yeah.
I think that got a lot of people into craft beer. Certainly, like, just the awareness of, like, oh, there's other things than the ones I'm seeing on TV ads.
It's always fascinating when you go somewhere, and I had, like, a Yingling hat for a while, and people were like, oh, yeah, like, we can't get that out. Even the first, my buddy's been up here for... I think, like, this is his seventh winter or something like that. And right when I would get off the exit by Manchester, there was, you know, just like a little general store kind of place. And I would go in there and I would pick up, you know, some beer or whatever. And I was just talking with the guy one time and said that I'm from Jersey. And he's just like, oh, like, we don't even get Yingling up here. He's like, you bring up a case of Yingling for me, I'll trade you.
Yeah.
And that's like, that's crazy. Even someone, I'm part of a pod, this podcast is part of a podcast network called cageclub.me, or Cage Club Podcast Network, and the website is cageclub.me.
Uh-huh.
And one of the guys that has a podcast on it, Joe, he is a beer fanatic. And he travels, he'll fly out to, like, LA for a day to go to a special event pick up beer and then drink it there, and then if he can send it back, like,
Philip
goes out there with empty suitcases and he's just like, I'm like, you have to teach me, because I love traveling, I love eating, I love drinking. I'm like, he finds, like, deals and deals, like, over and over again.
That's
and I wonder, I'll have to ask him if he's been up here, because he is just a beer connoisseur and
Vermont's the place to be.
Yeah exactly. So I mean, yeah, like, you guys were coming up here frequently, and you just happened to find Brattleboro? Because, again, it's not, you know, like, I came from Stratton. It's like a 40, 45-minute drive. Everything's, you know, it's spread apart up here.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, we stopped in a lot of towns, and just Brattleboro had the right vibe for us.
So. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a cool little town.
Folks around town, and just went from there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, when it comes to sours, like, what are we... What are you doing in the sense of getting people in and trying to, like, you know, educate them?
Yeah.
And what are you, like, which ones, you know, like, as, like, I mean, I think there, I tried to look it up. There's no word for, like, a beer sommelier, right? I think it's beer sommelier.
Some, like, Cicerone is kind of one of them that's starting to take off a little bit.
Yeah.
And even then, like, I think in our experience, sour beer is kind of underdeveloped and underappreciated, kind of, especially in the American market.
Yeah.
It's been up and coming for the last, about 5 years since we opened.
Yeah.
But even, you know, looking at kind of like the standard beer classification styles, there's basically one category that every sour fit into until 2 or 3 years ago. Mm-hmm. And only now there's been sort of, you know, some differentiation.
Yeah.
We don't pay that much mind. We make beer that we know tastes good.
Yeah.
And doesn't particularly fit into style categories necessarily. But education is a huge part of what we do.
Sure.
You know, a lot of the beers that we're making, we, you know, think very hard about the packaging, the beer names, how we describe those beers is tremendously important to let people know what's going on, because
okay, yeah.
there's so much variation in terms of that sour beer head, and we make so many different kinds of beers.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, you have to imagine someone, like, whether they haven't had it before or maybe aren't, you know, like, some sours might be too sour for
sure.
them. I mean, that was the whole thing. Like, I was never, I'm still not, like, educated when it comes to wine.
Yeah.
But I really never drank it, never, like, thought it was, like, the best thing or whatever. But then I had friends that live out in the North Fork of Long Island,
mm-hmm.
and there's a bunch of wineries there.
Sure.
And, then, you know, it's young, so it's, like, a lot more, like, the whites are better, the rosés versus
sure.
the reds. But I, you know, we went to a winery, and I just went up, and I said, like, teach me. I was like, I want to be your Padawan right now. Like, you know, like, what I'm not, like, I don't know a lot about wine. I've never particularly had a wine that I've, really enjoyed before.
Mm-hmm.
I always used to say that wine was acquired taste, which I have not acquired yet, which I now have acquired, but I definitely need to learn more. But,
yeah.
like, you know, then they were like, okay, yeah, like, let me, and they gave me a rosé, and, you know, I'm a big burly guy that was just enjoying a nice, you know, cold rosé, and that was, like, the journey of that. But, yeah, so, like, when someone comes in here, because mm-hmm. you guys, you know, are specifically sours,
yeah.
like, what are you telling them? What are you, like, what are you giving to
them? I think just the talking about wine is actually a great place to start, because I think sour beer and wine have a lot of similar characteristics.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that kind of drew me to it in the first place, the dryness, the acidity,
yeah.
the oak characteristics a lot of time, but also has kind of a depth and complexity of flavor that a lot of other beer doesn't. So instead of just worrying about malt and hops, you really, I mean, and yeast is also an important flavor characteristic in a lot of beers, but a lot of, you know, even craft beers, but especially macro beers, have kind of de-emphasized the importance. You're trying to get your fermentation flavor out of the way.
Yeah.
And with sour beer, that's one of the most important things.
Sure, yeah, the key
is you know, using our mixed culture fermentation. We, you know, use hundreds of different microbes as opposed to one lab isolated strain. We wild harvest everything. And, you know, so I think one of the best ways to learn is to come here and talk to us about it.
Of course, we
do a great job with our tasting room staff. Everybody there loves the beer we make and loves talking about it.
Yeah.
And I found that it's really, I think the other great thing is to challenge people to try something that they wouldn't normally get.
Sure.
I know there's a lot of sour beer that I don't much care for.
Oh, really? Okay, yeah, that was going to be quite,
but
like,
that's not the stuff that we make. it's because it's such a developing market, then there's so many different approaches to how you're making sour beer, the different microbes, how you work with that, that it, for me, even if there's other beers in that style I haven't liked, I want to try something new that somebody else is doing,
why not?
Because they might be doing something differently than the beer I didn't like.
You might try something that'll inspire you.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And definitely, I think one key that we really focus on when we're brewing, and especially blending, is balance.
Okay.
Is having beers that are sour and have that characteristic, but that's not their reason for being. We make a beer, it's going to taste good, and we try to have sour be a component of that, not the defining feature.
Yeah.
So it's beers that happen to be sour because of the process that we're using,
yeah.
and that helps support the flavors. Yeah.
I mean, when it comes to trying out a new, are we calling it blend or batch or brew?
Any of those.
How many, is there kind of like a number of trial and errors, or like what goes, is that process? Like,
it kind of depends on the beers that we're making. So
okay.
a lot of our recipes we've developed, you know, over the last 5 or 6 years, you know, Chris, as our brewmaster, has done a lot of that kind of research on the back end before we even opened. But we always, every batch we do is a little bit different. We like to tweak things, change some ingredients. One of the major things we've done over the last 3 or so, even like the last 4 years, is we've been shifting more and more heavily towards using locally grown hops. So we're really lucky that we have a hop farm that's about 20 minutes down the road Northfield, Massachusetts, that is growing and making incredible products. That they grow varieties that are also grown out in the Northwest, where a lot of American hops come from.
Mm-hmm.
But even those same varieties, because of the difference in terroir, they taste different.
Yeah.
And so we've been really leaning in towards building beers around those flavors. So
locally sourced and
sourcing locally, working with directly with our farmers and kind of making cool stuff like that.
Very cool. Yeah. And I mean, that's gotta be, is there a difficulty keeping it local just in the sense that here it's seasonal versus like out in like the West Coast, obviously they can farm all year long.
No, actually no, hops are seasonal pretty much wherever they're growing. There's really only one harvest season for hops and it's like a month long. So pretty short. And so, you know, those will get harvested and packaged hopefully for longer term storage. So we actually haven't had too much issue. And if anything, you know, we make some fresh hop beers where we can have those, you know, those hops picked and within 30 minutes be in the beer. Because I can just drive down with my car and pick them up from the farm. Like, so it's about as fresh as those beers can get.
Wow. Well, yeah. I'm talking to a lot of people. I mean, that is, I think, what people in your position want. And then also then via once you're doing it, you're educating, you're telling people. And then I think that's what people – I mean, farm to table. That's it's now in our lexicon.
Farm to glass.
Farm to glass. Yes, exactly. But yeah, no. Another chef I had on, Robbie Felice, he was just like, "Yes, the pork you eat in my restaurant, I picked that pig out 3 days ago."
Yeah,
like that's. But I think, you know, I mean, it just makes it obviously fresher in that sense too. But I think that's what people, what people want.
But it's fun, and like again, getting back to like the yeast and kind of the microbes we're using that kind of define the flavors we're using. Those are all local too.
Yeah.
So we try to make beer that tastes like where we are.
Okay.
So we're using those local ingredients that have a different terroir than, you know, hops from the Northwest. We have yeast that tastes different from even neighboring communities.
Yeah.
So I think really we're excited to be making beer that it doesn't matter if you try to replicate it, you can't, because we're getting things that only we here can have access to, which is, I think, the best way to be a craft brewer is to really focus on why, you know, making whatever beer you're making, where you're making it is just as important as the product itself.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So as far as you've been open for 5 years, like how big is your staff now? What goes into the distribution? Because so we're here in Brattleboro, but you guys have another facility?
Yep, so about 3 or 4 miles down the road, actually maybe a little more than that. About a year and a half ago, we opened up a new facility, mostly for aging and packaging. So all of our barrels, kind of our larger oak fooders, our canning line, that all lives, you know, down the road a little bit, just because where we're at here, we're kind of maxed out in the footprint we can have. So we continue to brew all the beer here, but then it gets basically moved over there to get finished and then shipped out. So I think as of now, we're in distributing in 8 different states and D.C., which is a pretty big footprint overall. There's been tremendous growth.
And how many beers do you have on tap now?
Like, I mean, it varies a lot. We've made a lot of beers.
I looked at the menu, and it was like it has grown a lot in the past 2 years.
For our fifth anniversary, actually, that day we finished installing a new draft system to double the size of our tap list. So we're up to 20 sour beers just in-house here.
That's crazy.
And I think we have close to 30 available in cans right now. But we rotate things very regularly, kind of iterate on designs and kind of play with what's new and exciting to us.
Yeah,
and keep around our favorites.
Because I mean, well, your bigger ones like Party Guy, right?
Yep.
Like that's
Party
like,
Guy, yep. That's and kind of our fruited version, our party jams. Yeah. But also beer like Brattle Beer, you kind of had the estate version of. That's one of the beers that was one of the very first beers we brewed.
Yeah.
Actually, and for our anniversary party, we released our Hoppy Smalls, which is like a very hoppy, locally hop session table beer.
Awesome.
Kind of like more on a Saison style. That literally the first beer we brewed here at the brewery by accident, but we loved it so much that now we keep on bringing it back.
That's great. I love your gin barrel.
Oh yeah, that's that for us represents a collaboration, which we do a lot with our farmers, but also with our other suppliers.
Yeah.
So we work with the Caledonia Spirits. They were in Hardwick now, I think their main facility is in Montpelier, but we get all of our gin barrels from them.
Okay.
You know, local gin that I love their product.
Yeah.
So tasting, getting to have those barrels and knowing where those have been and how that's all moving around. It's really fun.
I love
fun
some
to,
good gin.
To work with folks.
We there's a distillery in Jersey City. It's called Corgi Distillery. And they have this one Earl Grey gin.
Oh, fun.
And it's dangerous because you take that and, you know, you just even have that on ice or put a little lemonade in there and you got like kind of like
I'm a big bergamot fan. I'm going to check this out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a good place. And it's just great because, I mean, I think on Thursdays it's like, you know, instead of like $12 cocktails, it's $8 cocktails. So
nice.
Can't beat that. You can bring food in there and eat it.
Not bad at all.
Like that's, you know, obviously we're talking a lot of beer, but just as far as, I mean, Vermont's food scene and just, I mean, the home of Ben & Jerry's. But I mean, just what goes into like, you know, you know, people always think wine and pairing, but I mean, there's a whole world of that for beer too.
Oh,
right?
Absolutely. Yeah. We work with a number of cheesemakers in the area too, not just for pairing projects, but also
cheddar cheese. I mean, that's...
but like we make so much more than cheddar in Vermont.
Oh, of course.
Like, that's the great thing.
But
it's like
there's
so many small, like just as many, you know, as we have a reputation for, you know, bespoke breweries. I think we have just as, you know, top quality cheese in the area. So we work with. We've worked with at least three or four different cheese producers in the state, and do collaborations with them with like beer wash cheeses, but also on the pairing side. So it's been a tremendous part of, you know, what we love to do. Again, back to collaboration and pairing. I think sour beer in particular pairs extremely well with the kind of foods that wine does.
Yeah,
we
mean,
definitely
just that,
lean into that.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I mean, it's the sweet meets, you know, savory. That's
exactly.
You can never beat that. I mean, I think it's in, like, Ratatouille when he's having, like, an apple or a grape and cheese. I mean, there's just, as far as the simplicity of foods go, you can't just beat just, like, when you just have that perfect sweet and that perfect savory. So you said you've had some sours that you haven't enjoyed. Like, is there, like, what makes a... Is it just, do you think it's just preferential, or do you think there's something that makes a sour too sour? You know, just like when it comes to IPAs, sometimes you're like, this is just too hoppy.
Balance is really what it comes down to for me.
Yeah.
I like beers that have balance, and I like beers that, you know, I guess commit to their flavor profile.
Mm-hmm.
I found that a lot of other sours that I've had, I won't name any names, but usually
no,
either
let's get into
lean
let's
too much.
People out.
I don't remember. That's the problem. I can't. If I could.
Yeah.
I would if I could. It's either lean just too much into just trying to make something that's sour and forget about having the rest of that palate that needs to come with that to support, or the sour is an afterthought and they have another fully formed beer that also happens to be sour that doesn't quite take advantage of what you can do with your microbiology.
So I read that you're... on the board of directors of Vermont's Brewers Association?
I'm actually the president.
You're the president?
I'm the president, yeah.
So you're the VP here, right?
Yeah.
And then the president.
Yep. And the president of the Brewers Association.
Yeah, so what, I really don't know much about that. I mean, what are the dealings of the Vermont Brewers Association?
I mean, we do advocacy, promotion, and kind of helping visibility and support for our state's brewers. So I think we've just... Either we're at 61 or 62 members. I don't remember based on my last meeting. But, yeah, one of the larger ones in the country, actually.
I mean,
think
it makes sense, obviously, given
best.
How many fantastic breweries
are
in the state.
Really, focused on, you know, we do a lot of legislative work, but we also look for ways to help support our, you know, we're all growing businesses.
Yeah.
So business support to an extent, definitely helping with things like a Vermont Brewer's Passport. There's an app that we have where you can basically go check into your different breweries around the state, has them all on a map.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you get Vermont brewery swag for going and visiting more of
that's cool.
More of us. It's been great. We've been involved since we opened up, and just thankfully I feel very proud that my association trusts me to help lead the way.
Yeah, like I said before, it really is a mecca for beer lovers, but there is, I mean, clearly there's a tourist destination, especially in the wintertime up here, with all the mountains and everything. But I think that there is even more people, because in the end of the day, for me, from, like, North Jersey, you know, not too far outside of the city, you know, it's like a 3.5-hour drive.
That's
which,
not bad at all.
Which is not bad at all. So you want to do, like, a weekend up here, you know, you leave Friday evening, and then you can enjoy, especially like all day Saturday, and go. You got three breweries walking distance right here.
Absolutely,
there's something, you know, something special about that.
I think so. That's why I'm here.
Yeah. Do you have any breweries that like are, you know, besides obviously Thrush that are just like just mean a lot to you, that are just like some of your favorites?
Oh my gosh, for me, you know, I think I felt more that way 5 or 6 years ago, but being part of this community in Vermont, it's for me, it's so many, just the people, even more than the breweries. Like, we have such a collaborative, focused, really friendly, helpful group of people in the state that are making beer.
Yeah.
Like, I honestly can't pick favorites. I have favorite beers that they make, but I don't know that there's any brewery that I haven't found something I've loved about. So, that's a cheesy answer, but it's really true.
No,
like,
yeah.
The more I feel, the more I've been here, just the more I've really gotten into that. And
did you have a beard before living up here? You have a mighty beard.
I've had a beard since 16. Yeah.
Okay.
Of some sort.
Okay.
So, when I was a paramedic, a little bit shorter and more tightly
trimmed.
Yeah, you
don't want anyone grabbing onto that.
Yeah. But this one's been
It's the winter time, so you need to, you know.
This is actually the shortest it's been in 5 years.
Wow.
Yeah, I just got married a couple weeks ago.
Oh, congratulations.
Or I guess a month ago now. But yeah.
Oh, boy, already forgetting.
I got my hair done up in a big permed mullet. I had hair down to my, basically down to my chest, and a big permed mullet just because we got married on Halloween and had a whole dress-up thing.
Yeah, that's fun.
And I had to go run our Brewers Association annual meeting the Monday after Halloween. So I was like, well, I don't really want to have a permed mullet for that. So got out my clippers and took everything down.
But I mean, like Vermont, it's just, I mean, there's a lot of, I mean, you know, I mean, people just know it as, like, well, like a better word, like a lot of hippies up here, mm-hmm. I guess, in that sense. But just people are kind and welcoming. Like, what does that mean to you being part of this community? Just even besides, obviously, your business is here, but just living up here now.
No, it feels as much as like home as
you're from
home
the Midwest. Yeah, exactly.
I grew up in the Midwest. Yeah. I mean, for me, it reminds me a ton of Vermont in terms of the culture and the community. It's just warmer and bigger hills. Yeah. That's really the biggest difference that I've found.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's like, you know, up here, like New England, you know, I mean, sans Boston, because there's some rough people. Boston, people down by the harbor. And then obviously, as far as New York and Jersey City, I mean, I guess, you know, I think at the end of the day, I think it's like traffic that causes the most congestion and traffic.
I like space and I like trees. And Vermont has a lot of both.
A lot of both, exactly.
So I'm a very happy camper.
Yeah, a lot of maple syrup.
Oh, yeah.
Have you guys done any kind of maple sour?
You know,
is that possible?
It is. We just haven't found one that we were happy enough with to make a full batch of yet.
Mm-hmm.
It's tough. Maple's a difficult one when you're fermenting beers as dry as we do because so much of the character from the maple comes from the sweetness.
Yeah.
And when you ferment up those sugars, it tastes a little bit weird. So we haven't dove into that yet, but there's a lot of good maple beers around.
Yeah.
Definitely a lot of people in Vermont playing with that.
Is there anything else you want to talk about business-wise?
This
has been great so far.
Awesome. No, I'm feeling good.
Let me just see if there's anything.
I mean, we make our own maple syrup here. My wife's father has a sugar shack just up the road from here. So
really? You make your own? Yeah?
Oh, yeah. So we make, I don't remember how many gallons. We're making probably close to 100 gallons a year, but pretty small.
And that takes a lot to make that many.
It does.
Right?
It's labor of love. It's not there for it's mostly for just home use.
Have you seen that? Oh, God. I think it's on Netflix. And it's what series is that? It's about different crimes, and there was that big maple.
The maple
theft.
Syrup heist,
Isn't that the craziest
that's
thing ever?
That's a great, that's a fantastic
like
story.
Like the mafia of it all, like the enforcement of the government, and then it is in the way, like, prohibition dealings in
my gosh, it's just absolutely crazy.
And they filled them with water, right? And like
the
bunch, like so many gallon drum, like 50 gallon drums, like hundreds of you know.
And as far as I know, they never actually found it all.
No.
That's crazy.
It's the craziest, like, I mean, you mentioned, like, the gin barrels before, and then the beer that I had, that was, I mean, this is special, as Joan was saying, that it was the first,
the first beer in that, and then a fresh oak barrel, yeah.
So what, I mean, yeah, like, I mean, how many, like, what is your barreling process, like, what goes into choosing? Obviously, you know, the gin, you're like, we want a gin flavor
to it.
But yeah.
It depends on the beer we're making. So we kind of know what we want the end product to be like and then work backwards from there.
Okay.
So a lot of times, like with a beer, like we have one called Dark at 4:30.
Yeah.
That's more like a sour stout.
Yeah.
And we know that would play really well with some more, you know, red wine characteristics. So we source our barrels kind of more red wine, something like the gin barrel saison. It's obviously in the name. We want gin barrels for that. Sometimes our lighter beers will go more towards white wine barrels. It just really depends. And honestly, neutral oak is just as good for us.
Yeah.
Because that's really just kind of a home for our native microflora.
Yeah.
So that's at that point is just getting that little micro-oxygenation you get in from the oak, plus a good home for our bacteria and yeast. And then it's not as much about the oak flavor as the properties of that barrel.
Like I said, I was down in Asheville a couple months ago, and so many breweries.
Yeah.
But there's the one Wicked Weed, and then they just recently
they've
been bought out by I forget was it Coors?
I think it was Budweiser.
Budweiser, because New Belgium was just purchased by whatever Coors.
Kirin, actually.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If I remember right, I think a Japanese brewery.
Okay, yeah. Yeah. And, I mean, you know, when I was down there, we were taking Ubers or we were talking with locals, and it was like a 50-50 split on people like, they sold out. Like, you got to go to Burial, because Burial Brewery is like, you know, like
they do
on
some
the
good
top
stuff.
Of the pedestal, I think, just in the country besides even, like, as far as, you know, I know very little about it, but that's why I was like, I mean, they had fantastic beer. I mean, there's fantastic beer everywhere. Yeah. Like, I don't necessarily know or have the palate yet to be like, oh, this, when it comes to this kind of beer, versus just knowing that I enjoy it.
Right.
But, yeah, where are you, I mean, hey, you're co-founder, you're the VP, you're brewing beer here. Like, what, where do you stand on that, like, as far as people's thoughts on, like, you know, especially in this atmosphere, you know, is a local atmosphere,
sure,
too.
Sure, like, yeah. It's kind of tough. On the one hand,
you want to make money and they give you good stuff.
No,
to,
I respect that they make their own business decisions.
Yeah.
That's your choice as a business owner to do that.
Yeah.
On the other hand, I could also seen what it does to brands and how they end up working. So I kind of feel like it hurts me a little bit on the inside, but I don't hold it against anybody that makes that choice.
Yeah, I think
it's not a choice I'd want to have to make.
But I think my friend was telling me, the guy that we went for his bachelor party, he told me about the New Belgian deal, and from as far as what he told me, sounded like they got a pretty good deal in the sense that, number one, I think like everyone that worked there had like a share in it.
Yeah,
or something
they're
like
employee
that. So
owned.
Employee owned. So they all made out pretty well. And then just as far as the deal, they're just like, now you just have our resources,
right?
Which has got to be pretty exciting.
That's
right?
What they tell you.
Yeah. Well, that's exactly. That's what. Yeah, exactly. There's always business people. In the end of the day, people just want to make money, I guess, when it comes to that level of
That's always my concern. I don't know that it's always borne out, but that's I always keep that in the back of my mind. I always loved New Belgium. They've always had a really good sour program, and they've actually been an industry leader in sustainability and like green brewing processes. So that's, you know, something that we definitely take to heart here also.
Is, definitely.
You know, that focus on sustainability is really important to what we're doing.
Awesome.
So
hopefully that sticks
around. Like, that's I more power to them if they can do that and help spread the word.
Yeah, they're it felt like I was on like Google campus when I was there. It's like the craziest.
It's really cool spot.
Yeah, really cool spot. Yeah. And then Wicked Weed, like, you know what? Like, after, I don't know, it was after they were, you know, bought, but like they have a separate place called the Funkatorium.
Yeah.
And it's all crazy sours there.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, yeah, just, I mean, I guess, you know, there's always a catch 22 or there's give and take, but that's, but as you said, like sustainability, that's definitely got to be, I mean, it's important everywhere now. Everyone has to be much more conscious, just as far as, like, I know my hometown, not Jersey City, but I think Jersey City made some law about plastic bags. But now they have, like, thicker plastic bags that are reusable at ShopRite, but it's like, but are people bringing them back?
Yeah.
Like, is that better? Like, just make it like you got to have canvas tote bags or something
Here we have a plastic bag ban here in Brattleboro.
Okay.
So you either get a tote bag or you can pay for a paper bag. It's like you just can't get any sort of plastic bags.
Yeah. What goes into what sustainability as far as brewery territory? Like, what are you?
Oh, man, every aspect.
Really?
Like, it's a lot. So actually, one of our one of the guys that works with us, Chuck, is our sustainability coordinator. So
we got a guy at that position. Yeah.
Super into it. Actually, with the Brewers Association, we actually created a sustainability committee for the state.
Oh, wow. Okay,
about
that's great.
A year ago now. So it's been kind of, water is in a really important part of it.
Yeah.
You know, brewing is a water intensive process. You know, it can be up to, like, I don't know the stats off the top of my head, so I probably shouldn't try to say any, but it's multiple gallons of water to make 1 gallon of beer.
Okay.
And that's from the heating, just from loss, evaporation. There's just a lot of little places that, you know, and there's also ways to save that water. Energy is also a really important part. So we're the only brewery, as far as I know, in the world that's using wood pellets. So locally sourced, sustainable wood pellets for all of our process energy.
Wow.
You know, there's some other breweries using other cool things.
How'd you figure out that? Like, what was the...
We worked with a local steam plumber and kind of came up with a plan.
That's pretty innovative. Did you have to, like, patent something behind that?
No, so it was all... We ended up just kind of using some repurposed home heating units that had the specs that we needed in terms of BTUs and kind of steam output. So
it's
been pretty cool.
Got it working right away? Like, it was pretty smooth process?
Pretty smooth process, yeah.
That's good.
We worked a little bit with one of our local Efficiency Vermont that kind of helps with some of the more eco business projects and actually home projects too.
That's got to feel good. That's like a,
really cool. So every time we're doing things, even, you know, down to packaging, process, every step of the way, we're looking at how to be more efficient in terms of resource utilization and making choices that are going to have more positive effects down the road.
Yeah. Awesome. Know? Yeah. Well, it wouldn't be Foodie Films without a couple of food scenes. I told you about them beforehand.
Oh, yeah.
So right now, we're in Vermont. We were talking maple syrup. So we're going to play the clip right now of from Super Troopers, the did I write down the official title or name of it? But it's the chugging syrup. So we're going to play that clip right now.
One, two, three.
Do it.
Oh, go, girlfriend. I'm your mother. Come on, Thorny. You're losing to the rookie. It's embarrassing. Come on, Rabbit. You can do it. Oh, Rabbit, he's killing you. I got Thorny in front by a lot. What's the matter? Your mama didn't teach you how to chug? Come on, Thorn. Come on, Thorn. Oh.
God damn it. I am all that is man.
Every time.
Finish it up. See, there you have it. You're doing it all wrong. You gotta open your throat, relax the jaw.
Don't forget to cup the balls. And you're never gonna win with those thin little bird lips you got there. See, this guy's got these big old powerful lips. Am I correct, Thorn?
So much of my authority is derived from the power right here.
I am all that is man. Like, Thorny. Like, he is just, like, chugging down with his beautiful brown lips, as he says.
Have you ever tried to do that? It's way harder than you think.
I can't imagine. Like you said, like, you know, as far as, I mean, you know, syrup in general is just a weird thing. But then, like, I mean, yeah, like, that's got to be so sticky. And then, like, almost like, I don't know. Maybe people that could do, like, sword swallowing.
A little bit of a sugar high.
Yeah.
It's a little.
I would say so.
Hits
yeah,
you a little
exactly.
bit right in the diabetes.
Yeah. But, I mean, hey, maple syrup. I mean, you can put it on a lot of things, but I guess you can chug it too.
You can.
But we don't
wouldn't recommend it.
And exactly. And you can chug beers, but we don't want to chug these beers. We want to sip and we want to enjoy them.
That's good. Yeah. No, there are definitely some beers that are for chugging.
Yeah. I mean, Super Troopers. I mean, I don't know how many movies, like, off the top of my head, like, take place in Vermont, but that's just like,
there's not a lot.
Yeah.
That I know of.
Yeah.
I know a few that were shot in Vermont.
Sure. Yeah.
Specifically, what's it? Cider House Rules.
Oh,
it was actually
yeah.
shot just about 15 minutes north of here.
Wow.
Yep. Great little apple.
Sir Michael Caine.
Absolutely. Wonderful movie. But
good night, you princes of, I don't know, Massachusetts. Your
the kings,
kings of New England.
Kings of, oh gosh, I wish I remembered
something.
It.
Yeah.
It's a great line.
This is a great line. Out on Long Island in the North Fork that I said I go to, there's a cider house there. I always walk in. I said, what are your rules? It's a really bad joke. But they don't allow dogs in there, so I'm like, that's one of your rules.
There
you
go.
Yeah, but Super Troopers, man, when that came out, I mean, I was in, like, early high school.
That's about, yeah.
I was not partaking in any, well, is weed legal up here now?
It's decriminalized. Okay. Yeah. You can't get it recreationally yet in Vermont, but you can home grow.
Okay.
Allowed to have some. And Massachusetts is right next door.
Yeah. Are we partaking or was it?
Who, me?
Yeah.
Right now? Not right now.
Not right now. Okay.
Not when I'm on the radio.
No, we're not. Yeah. No.
I'm recording.
No, not at all. No. No, we aren't. I mean, that's serious now. But yeah, I mean, that was before I ever tried. But I mean, you know, that's just like one of those. I mean, it became such a cult classic.
Oh, yeah.
And just like, obviously, like stoner kind of
hilarious.
Comedy. Hilarious.
Yeah. I'm not much of a comedy fan either, but that movie is hilarious.
Yeah. I mean, do you remember like watching that for the first time? That was just like, I feel like that's a nonsense.
I only half remember it.
Yeah.
Not going to state any reason why. I just say I kind of remember having seen it once.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's that's just like one of those, you know, like when you get those comedies that are just so quotable.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like, I mean, you have like your Will Ferrell, your Jim Carrey's, but those guys, the Broken Lizard guys, were like nobodies.
Yeah.
You know, like, and then, you know, they had the, I mean, we're eventually going to cover Beer Fest as an episode.
Oh, okay, yeah.
You know, because that's a food-centric one. And Club Dread was a good movie, but then they just recently, I mean, it's been so many years.
Super Troopers 2.
Yeah.
I never saw it.
Wasn't good.
Oh, God.
Sorry, Broken Lizard guys.
That's all right.
Yeah. Oh, and we covered one. We already covered Slammin' Salmon, which is a movie about a restaurant that's, like, owned by former boxer character played by the late Michael Clark Duncan.
Oh, okay.
And, yeah, not that good. Yeah. But I was like, oh, it's a restaurant movie. And I watched it in high school or early college when it came out, and I remember not liking it. I'm like, maybe it'll be better now. No. Yes. And let's play second scene for you. This is Shawshank Redemption on top of the, you know, the roof of the prison.
I'd only ask 3 beers apiece for each of my co-workers.
Co-workers, get him. That's rich, ain't it?
I think a man working outdoors feels more like a man if you can have a bottle of suds. It's only my opinion, sir.
What are you, Jimmy, staring at? Back to work!
Let's go, work!
And that's how it came to pass, that on the second to last day of the job, the convict crew that tarred the plate factory roof in the spring of 49 wound up sitting in a row at 10 o'clock in the morning, drinking icy cold Bohemia-style beer, courtesy of the hardest screw that ever walked a turn at Shawshank State Prison.
Drink up while it's cold, ladies.
The colossal prick even managed to sound magnanimous. We sat and drank with the sun on our shoulders and felt like free men. Hell, we could have been tarring the roof of one of our own houses. We were the lords of all creation. As for Andy, he spent that break hunkered in the shade, a strange little smile on his face, watching us drink his beer.
Is there anything soother than Morgan Freeman's voice?
I don't think so. Right? I actually have a little set of headphones next to my bed I listen to them every night.
Yeah, instead of like whale noises, it's Morgan Freeman.
It's both.
It's raining.
Morgan Freeman narrating whale voices. It's
perfect. Yeah, he's riding a whale. With it's a rainy night. Yeah, in the rain. That's just, yeah, when I get a cold sometimes I can do like, Andy Dufresne was my friend. Like, try to hit that Morgan Freeman. But that is just, I mean, that came out in 94. That was like, that year was like Pulp Fiction, Forrest Gump, Shawshank Redemption. What, like, you know, that scene is just crazy because it's not the, it's like the real asshole prison guard. He's not the warden, but he's like that, I'm totally blanking on that actor's name. But you got Tim Robbins, who we don't know is guilty or not guilty at that point, and he's goes up to him, and they're tarring the roof, and it's the summertime, and it's, besides, it's prison, and he's already had horrible experiences. That's got to be, like, even though it's outdoors, that's got to be a horrible job to be doing, especially in the summertime.
Oh, yeah.
And he goes up and taps on his shoulders because he hears about, like, that someone left him money or whatever, and says, like, I can do your taxes for you, and he's, like, about to throw him off the roof, and he's just like, no, I know you're a smart guy, and, like, all that, but, like, I can do it for free. All I want is 3 beers apiece for each of my coworkers, you know, the fellow inmates tarring the roof.
Right.
And then you just get, like, what I think is one of the most beautiful scenes, and just, you know, like, not to be, like, as a man, but, like, since they are men, and Morgan Freeman in his voice is recalling it this way as the narrator and one of, you know, main characters is just saying, like, you know, like, we felt like free men again. Like, what, like, sometimes beer,
simple,
you know,
pleasures.
Simple pleasures, right?
Yeah.
Like, just, you know, just sitting outside, you got, what, you got, I mean, what river is that right over here? Is
it Connecticut.
Connecticut
right there.
Okay, Connecticut. Yeah. I mean, you know, you just got beautiful, I mean, you're in Vermont. There's beautiful scenery everywhere. Like, in the end of the day, working, like, is there, I mean.
Oh, yeah, it gets crazy hot back in the brew house.
Yeah.
I remember, you know, when I was still actively one of the brewers, especially on, you know, summer days, it's 100, 110 degrees back there. And
yeah.
Damp. And Vermont is a very humid place.
So yeah, we'd grab some
short fills, drive down to the river, and just go lay in the river, have a beer. There's nothing like it.
Right? It's just like there's something magical about
working
just like
hard and relaxing.
And then just that refreshing. Yeah, just the relaxation. The day is done. Mm-hmm. And just like a cold beer. Like I said, like when I went to that place in West Jersey, that frosted. I mean, it was amazing because it was also dirt cheap.
Oh, yeah.
But like, just like, yeah. But just like, yeah, we worked like a long day. You know, working in video production, they can be long days and just moving like heavy equipment around.
Absolutely.
And just like being like that. I think that day it was like rainy and we're just like in this place and just like a nice cold Yingling. And
yeah, sign me up.
Right?
Yeah.
Well, last but not least, we've got our segment, Gut Instincts. Little speed round. So whatever kind of comes to you first.
I'm ready. How long of answer? You want short answer?
I mean, what if
whatever,
you know,
the
like,
right size? Okay.
Yeah. Whatever. We'll yeah. Exactly.
Sounds good.
So favorite fast food.
Favorite fast food burger.
burger? Were you going like a specific place?
No, just a good fast food burger.
Yeah.
Can't beat it.
Go to alcoholic beverage, and you can't give a place a beer from Hermit Thrush.
I won't give a beer from Etchy because it's not a Jim Beam on the rocks with some Angostura bitters.
Oh.
I call it the Zach special. Our first employee actually introduced me to that. He was my roommate for a little while.
Okay.
That was his drink of choice. It is perfect after a long day.
I love some whiskey, some bourbon, some scotch. That's just that. Actually, this is the first official, brewery, like an episode covering that. But when I did the Roadhouse episode with my buddy Shane, we made, did we make Old Fashions? I think we made some Old Fashions.
Nice. I drink as much scotch as I do anything else.
Favorite childhood snack?
Ooh, grapes.
Grapes?
I think so. Green grapes.
Green grapes?
Green grapes.
Okay. Sweet or savory?
Sweet. Tart. Sour.
Tart.
Yeah. I think it started early. I've always had that sour kick to it.
So our favorite childhood snack wasn't like Sour Patches or whatever? Warheads?
I was not a candy guy as much. Yeah. I mean, I must have, but I definitely, grapes it's what came to mind.
Yeah, of course. I'm not questioning it. I was just, there's a lot of sour candies out there.
Yeah.
Favorite food city?
Montreal. Yep.
I still have never been.
Oh, my gosh.
I know.
It is a fantastic eating city.
Yeah. I heard the bagels up there are, like, different than, because Jersey, New York.
The best.
Yeah?
Oh, yeah.
All right.
Without a doubt. They are very different from New York bagels.
Yes. That's what I heard. Yeah.
But they are.
I remember watching Bourdain did a Parts Unknown episode up there. I'm like, I need to go up there.
I've eaten at almost every place he went to there.
That's awesome. Man, since he's from Jersey.
Yeah.
When he passed away, and he did a Jersey episode.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, he's from North Jersey, like not far from where I grew up and where I, live now in Jersey City. But there's only one place on that episode he went that was in the North. It's called Hiram's. It was a hot dog place. And then he went to like a place, maybe one or two in Asbury, and then he went down to Atlantic City and Camden to this cheesesteak place that he was like, this is the best cheesesteak I've ever had. I'm like, haha, Philly. Like,
that's actually funny.
But yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
right across the river. But, but yeah, but they made a Bourdain food trail in Jersey for all the places that went
great.
In that episode. So I love going to a city that he visited. Like when I was in Budapest, I went to a place that he had blood sausages at. And I just love that about when it comes to food and drink, just like going to a place and knowing someone's been there, seeing someone's like almost it's sharing an experience in a way.
No, it's funny because actually I'd been to the places that he went to before he had gone there.
Oh,
so
that's got to be like
talking
little,
about
like
the food that I loved. I was like, yes,
I've got the same.
Is incredible.
I've got the same taste as Bourdain.
Yeah, that's good. Absolutely.
Favorite cuisine?
Indian. I'm half Indian, so
okay.
My grandma makes great Indian food.
There you go.
Hard to beat.
That's one of my girlfriend's friends. He had his engagement party, and he's Indian, and that was a whole feast. And that was I've had some Indian food, but that's a cuisine I need to venture more into.
Sure,
I need
I need
a guide to that cuisine. You know,
there's so much variation across the country. Yeah.
Guilty pleasure food.
This would be food.
No.
For me,
Coors
Banquet, guilty pleasure.
I like that.
It's true.
Yeah,
yeah.
Coors Banquet.
Yeah.
Coors. Favorite condiment.
Favorite condiment. Ooh, that's a tough one. Oh, mustard.
Mustard. Yellow, brown, spicy.
Spicy.
Yeah.
Granular. Something with some texture to it, or barbecue sauce if it's the right barbecue sauce. But mustard is probably up there.
What's the last thing you ate?
The last thing I ate, I had peanut butter toast for breakfast.
There we go.
Yeah.
What would be your last meal?
Last meal.
And obviously, your guy includes some beverages in this, so.
I mean, that is not one I've thought of. What is the last meal I would want? Huh. Something, you know what? Bread and cheese and a nice bottle of wine.
Wow,
keep it simple.
Yeah, simple. Some grapes out.
Yeah. I do that. On a lazy Saturday, if I don't feel like cooking, I'll just go drop down to our co-op, pick up a couple of cheeses I like.
Yeah.
Nice baguette. That's.
Yeah, cheese. Maybe put a little charcuterie in there. A little meat.
Exactly.
For good
maybe
measure.
Maybe some olives, just in case. And I'll share the bottle of wine, I guess.
All right. Well, you can have it as your last.
It's my last meal. I'll go to the
whole case.
Bottle.
Yeah, exactly. Just sit in the barrel. Dine in or dine out?
Depends on the place.
Okay.
But usually I like to dine in.
Okay. Do you like to cook? Or you cook?
I love cooking. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Oh, that's what you mean by dine in. I thought you meant like at a restaurant. Oh, that makes sense. Then definitely dine in.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Most nights I cook at home.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Do you have like a favorite dish you like to cook?
I have a lot of favorite dishes I like to cook. Yeah. I make a lot of Indian food, my grandmother taught me. I do, I don't know, kind of whatever I'm in the mood for. My wife is vegetarian, so I do a lot of vegetarian cooking, but it's not exclusively vegetarian.
This is the part where we're like dipping into the food section.
Oh, we could have talked about food for the whole hour. I talking about it.
Spirit food. What, or in this case, beverage.
Yeah.
What do you think embodies you, your personality?
Sauerkraut.
Sauerkraut.
Absolutely.
Wow.
I love or any of those fermented things, but cabbage in particular.
Yeah.
Every year, since I've moved up here, we've gone out and gone foraging for ramps. I'll make a ramp kimchi every year. I try to make a batch or two of sauerkraut every year because even outside of brewing, I love fermenting.
Yeah.
Like just the fun things you can do, the flavors you get out of that are just great.
I was just saying to my girlfriend before because we stopped at, what's that? It starts with a Y. It's the
Falafel. Yala.
Yala, yeah.
Yeah.
We just stopped at Yala before coming in here and really good falafel there, and just ate a couple of pickled vegetables and pickled.
That's one of my favorite spots in town. Dude, yeah, they make such. Their hummus is awesome.
Are they kind of at least again? I haven't been here two years.
Maybe about 2 years old.
Okay, yeah.
They've only opened that place maybe within the last year. But
okay, I was gonna say I didn't remember when just walking down the street.
Yeah, they've been selling their hummus in the area for probably 2 or 3 years now.
Good spot.
Yeah, I'm a big fan.
Going to the movies. Are we having any snacks or what?
Popcorn.
Popcorn.
Buttered
popcorn.
Real buttered popcorn. I don't like that diacetyl crap.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's something. Have you ever been to like an Alamo Draft House or any of those? So that's a chain that started in Austin.
Okay.
And now they've got the closest one to me for a while was in Yonkers, New York.
Yeah.
Now they have one in Brooklyn. Now they're opening up one by the One World, the Trade Center in downtown, and they have a bunch of, they try to keep it like all local breweries.
Oh, cool.
And it's a really cool, like they have a full-fledged bar. You could just go in there and drink at like a bar, but then they have, your standard, obviously, movies that come out weekly, but they have special events too. I saw how many Rocky movies are there?
Including
it was after Creed came out, so it was literally the six Rockies and then Creed. So it was,
it was
all six because there's five Rockies, like Rocky up to Rocky V, then Rocky Balboa, then it was Creed.
Right.
And it was just like I was having like a fever dream at the end of
so many Rocky movies.
Yeah, it was a long time.
That's
I think
a
we
lot
went there at like
Stallone.
11 in the morning, left at like 1 in the morning or something.
Oh my god.
It was a lot. But we got like an ornament, a Christmas ornament with a glove on it that said Alamo Draft House. but anyway, last but not least, I use the word food in this question. Greatest lesson you've learned in food, but obviously that just supersedes into every, food and drink. So yeah, just great one of or the greatest lesson you've learned.
I would say trust your instincts or your palate, really.
Okay.
If something tastes good to you, that's because it's probably good.
Okay.
And if it doesn't, then figure out why and fix it.
that goes for
me for cooking, for eating, for making beer. If you like it, then there's probably a reason you like it, and figure out what that is and do more of that.
That's a perfect answer. Yeah. I love that. That's great. Awesome. That's great advice. I can't thank you enough, Avery. That's just like this has been great.
Appreciate it, Kyle.
Please tell the listeners, the foodies out there, where they can find you, like social media wise. Obviously,
absolutely.
The location of where we are right now.
Yep, you can come into our tasting room in Hermit Thrush Brewery in Brattleboro, Vermont. Check us out on the web at www.hermitthrushbrewery.com or Facebook or Instagram at Brattlebeer.
Awesome. And we have a little catchphrase to end every episode that there's more to cut. I feel like that just, something my grandmother always used to say. You know, the plate was getting sparse. And it's like, don't worry, there's more to cut. But, just it transcends into everything. So it's become like my motto, something I live by. So if you don't mind reminding the foodies out there that there's more to cut.
Hey, guys, there's more to cut.
Perfect. Everyone's just nailing that recently. It's
That's
just
super.
Got a good.
It's an easy one.
Yummy, yummy, yummy. I got love in my tummy.